Okay. I don't know what to. I was going to talk about, because last night I gave a talk in Singapore about true love. It was Valentine's Day. But then also one of the other talks which I gave was in the United Nations building in Bangkok about resilience, you know, in places where there's lots of drama and trouble in the world. But you know, those two talks go together. So I'm going to try and weave them together this evening. What is the connection between resilience and Valentine's Day? Real true love. So anyway, that a lot of times, why do people celebrate Valentine's Day? Why are they looking for some love and acceptance in life? Why are they looking for a partner or true love? Do they really know what true love is? And if you understand what true love is, I think you'll be incredibly resilient, because the two go together. Little things, an example. I was just meditating the end there, and this beautiful sound of a little kid. Did you hear that? Oh, it's just so nice, it's so sonorous. I was like, no, shouldn't allow kids in here, too noisy. I was meditating, I was about to get in line, and this kid comes over. Now that's not resilience. Allowing yourself to be disturbed is true love. Loving this moment, learning how to respect it, learning how to be with it, learning how to see its beauty. Just learning, instead of rejecting things, embracing things. Instead of all this, oh, it shouldn't be this way. This is our world. What do you expect? And then we can become at peace with things. A lot of times there is difficulties in life. But what really affects us, there shouldn't be difficulties. It shouldn't be like this. I know, I just spent so much time just developing our relationship, it shouldn't be like this. Now do we call this suffering? Do we call this like double suffering? Or you're depressed? I don't want to be depressed. No. If you have someone, if you're feeling depressed, enjoy it. Because when you're depressed, you don't have to go to work. You can sleep in late. You can indulge in all these things which you don't usually allow yourself. Because you're depressed. Just a few weeks ago, when I was teaching in the Armadale group, there was this one guy, and you know, he asked a question about how to overcome depression in Buddhism, and then I told him these things. I said, and also, you can, when you're depressed, you can eat whatever you like. And he was laughing all over his face, because that day, because he was depressed, he ate so much ice cream, which he wouldn't usually allow himself. Oh, Dad, you're depressed. Come and have another scoop of ice cream. And he did that. There's lots of benefits when you get depressed. Now you can see what I'm saying here. You're learning how to find true love, even with depression. Sickness. You're being with it. You're not judging it. You're seeing parts of it which you never knew existed. It's one of the things, you know this, what do you do when you're sick? You go see a doctor, like I did once when I went to see this doctor. Years ago, I felt terrible, and I was in the doctor's surgery waiting to be seen. And then one of my friends, I used to go to this prison to teach meditation, and there was a prison officer. He came in there, he took one look at me, he said, Ajahn Brahm, what are you doing in here? I thought you were a meditator, you lived a good lifestyle, and you're sick? I felt so guilty. As if he caught me in a pub or a nightclub, and I'm a monk.
monks aren't supposed to get sick. But whenever these things happen, interesting things happen, I always make use of it. And so, if that's me, you know, feeling that, you know, I'm in the wrong place, I'm terrible, I'm hopeless, I've done something wrong, that I'm sick today. Imagine how other people feel when you're sick. Do you feel guilty about being sick? Do you feel, oh, I've done something wrong, or the world's done something wrong to me, it's awful, I'm sick? If you do, you don't understand sickness, you haven't got true love for sickness. So what true love to sickness is, you go to see your doctor. There's something right with me, I'm sick again, doctor. Can you do that? It means you go to see the doctor, you're not just ignoring it. And actually, if you think there's something wrong with it, it stigmatizes you, you're afraid of it, because it's a personal failure. If you get sick, you get cancer, you get heart disease, or high blood pressure, or low blood pressure, or no blood pressure, I don't know what difficult things are. But anyway, if you feel this is a personal failure, then you'll be in denial. You won't go to see the doctor. So no, I haven't got a tumor, no, I'm not sick, no, I haven't got a cough, no. You can see the reason why people wait until the last moment, when it's usually too late, is because it's a stigma. Being sick, you shouldn't be sick. So this is one of the problems. When we don't love the world, then sometimes we reject the world. We hide it. We are a liar to our own truth of our body. So that's with sickness, and also with your relationships. Is it tough having a relationship? You know, to being in love, living with another person? You know, sometimes people say, Chambram, what about your relationship? It is tough living with other people. I live with another person. Me. I wake up in the morning, and there I am. I go to Thailand, I wake up in the morning, I'm there again. I go to Singapore, I can't get away from myself. Wherever I go, there I am. But one of the things which I do, and this is a great way of understanding and making peace with yourself, having some true love with someone you can never escape from, yourself. When I wake up in the morning, first thing I do, even before I get out of bed, good morning, me. Welcome, another day. When I go to bed at night, I'm the last person I see. So I say, have a good night, Ajahn Brahm. I'm kind to myself. Even if no one else will be kind to me, I am. Sometimes I give lots of talks, sometimes lots of jokes, sometimes bad jokes. And when I say them, people don't laugh. And I don't get upset or miserable or depressed. I just realize that some people aren't advanced enough to understand my humor. I twist it around, I don't care. But you know that, sometimes when people get depressed or they go into addictions and they try to escape from things. And so there's all of these support groups, like Narcotics Anonymous, Alcoholics Anonymous, but there's a new group just been started for people like me who talk too much, who's addicted to talking, and it's called On and On and On and On Anonymous. Actually, you're more advanced than I thought. You laughed. But you know why there's laughter? Because laughter is actually accepting your mistakes and the fact that you're not perfect. That there is things which other people get upset about. But when you laugh at things like sickness. Imagine laughing at sickness. Could you do that? If you did, you'd heal up pretty quickly. But if you didn't heal up, at least you will die with a smile on your face. Would that be a wonderful way to go? And it can be done. This is why that one of the inspirations, he used to come to this place a long time ago. Every year he'd come travelling. Yeah, that's Dr. K. Sri Damananda from Malaysia. He's a very wonderful fellow. And he told this ghost story once. Because I gave a talk at his temple in Brickfields in Kuala Lumpur. And he wanted to get some people to come, so he gave a talk on ghosts. And the whole hall was full. There's no sitting space with people and ghosts all over the place. So he told exchanged all these stories, and one of the stories he told, he said, just close by there's somebody obviously died, and there was a ghost in the house, and they tried all these other religions and Taoists and goodness knows what else to try and get rid of this ghost, and it wouldn't go. So he went in there, really strong Buddhist chanting. Buddhists, we are the experts on ghosts, because on what happens between lives, in this life, because Buddhists, we get reborn many times. Sort of Christians and Muslims and atheists, they only get born once, so they don't have the experience which we have. So anyway, that's only joking, of course. But then he went over to the house, and he chanted, really good. It worked. This is actually not a joke. It's funny, but it was actually happened. The ghost left the house. And the next day, the neighbor came to complain. You got it. He just pushed the ghost to the next house, to the neighbors. So he had to go to every house in the street to actually push it, until it left the whole neighborhood. Some of these ghosts are really tricky. But anyway, when Dr. K. Sri Damananda was about to become a ghost, he didn't become a ghost, but he's about to die. So he had a cancer, and this was the reputation he had. And I asked his oncologist, I said, yeah, this happened. He said it was weird. He's the only person, this oncologist, so the only person he'd ever seen do this, when he was told that his illness was terminal and he was going to die, he laughed. He was laughing. It was like, just so happy. Can you do that? Why not? You're going to die anyway. So why not enjoy it? Can you do that? But anyway, so yeah, got cancer and dying, but he had true love. Do you love life? Put your hand up if you love life. Do you love death too? Put your hand up if you love death. Yeah, very good kid. Isn't death part of life? So if you really love life, you love death as well. It's part of things. So what do I mean by loving death, true love, taking away some of the lack of resilience which we have? How many people get very, very tense and scared even when one of your loved ones is about to pass on? And sometimes they don't pass on as soon as they should. She's not here this evening, but good old Jenny, she comes here every now and again. She was responsible for one of the most memorable funeral services which I ever did. But before the funeral service happened, obviously, that someone had to die. And that was her partner, Steve. And Steve was a whitewater rafter who went to make a business out of this, taking his clients to some of the most beautiful parts of the world, of the planet, charging them, making his living, and at the same time enjoying what he liked the most, white water rafting with his partner, Jenny. And well, maybe in his late 20s, early 30s, I can't remember now, got cancer. And just incurable. So there he was, and I went to visit him a few times. And you can imagine this very strong, fit, healthy young man, skin and bones. But I went to see him a few times. He had a good attitude, but he wasn't dying. And we were a bit concerned. The doctor said any day now, and that was about a week. And so, these are the moments. Thank you, Steve and Jenny, for reminding me of something really important. That real true love, the most powerful act of love, is to let a person go. I mean, really let them go, with your blessings. And so, you know, having that insight, I told Jenny, have you let Steve go yet? Have you given him permission to die? Sounds strange, doesn't it, that you have to give someone permission to die, but imagine that you were in that bed, you know, sick, close to death. The last thing you'd want to do, it's just deep in your subconscious, if you like, is to hurt the people you love the most. You know just how it might be, someone who really cares about you, and you're going to hurt them, you're going to die on them. And so what happened was that I told her, have you given Steve permission to die? And it's one of these years ago, but I always remember this very clearly. She jumped on the bed, and this, her husband, the love of her life, she put her hands around him, but so gently, because he was so brittle, and very kindly looked in his eyes, and said to him, Steve, I give you permission to go. It's okay to die. You can go with my love. And that night he passed away. That was all that he was waiting for. You can see the blockage. I can't actually be. And be in this process. I'm stopping it, I'm fighting it, even though it's hurting me like hell, because I don't want to hurt other people. Now, this is where we learn to love life, not to fight it, and that tightness and tension disappears. And things go quite naturally. Resilience is where we've been fighting the world too much, asking from this world what it can never give us. And so it's not true love, it's romantic love, it's fantasy love, it's love which doesn't really exist in this world, but we hope it does. But the real love, the true love, is much more powerful and much more beautiful. And what it means is, because we're fighting life, the string simile, I mentioned it just a little bit earlier in the meditation, the piano string or the guitar string, when it's really stretched tight, that things fall, there's impingements, unexpected things happen. We stretch so tight that something touches it, bing! And it makes a loud noise. You know, there was this girl who really sort of fancied me, and maybe just, that's the word in English, you know, she really wanted to go out with me. And so I actually visited her, and just her father collected this ancient pottery, Roman pottery, and he was obviously very wealthy, and he gave me this, he said, have a look at this. It was like a vase, and he said, oh, this is about 2,000 years old, it's worth a few million dollars. Why did he say that? And I couldn't give it back to him as soon as I could. And that fear there, because it was so brittle, and I was afraid. And because I was afraid of things breaking, I was very lucky I didn't drop it and pass it on quickly. The fear of things breaking makes the chance of breaking more likely. The fear of getting a disease, of breaking, makes that break
more likely. So the kindness and the love where we can let things be means we're not so tight, not so tense, out of fear. What might happen in the future? What happened to us in the past? Stretching us like a tight string. But when we're loose, something hits that string. There's no tightness, there's no stress. It doesn't make any noise. That's what we call resilience. We can be so peaceful, so positive, that life's, whatever happens to us, does not affect us like others. So seeing that beautiful kid outside, just, I thought it was very nice what they were doing. Somebody coughs in the meditation. Oh, that's so wonderful that they've relieved some of the pressure in their throat. When you start to love life as it is, it's not being irresponsible, it's actually improving our life. True love. Accepting yourself as you are. Who are you? And that sometimes, oh, I have many different roles in life, many different hats, many different, but who is the real Ajahn Brahm? And I don't know. You want to let me know who I am? You know, I did actually get offered once, it was one of my memories. I got offered a job in Melbourne Comedy Club. They were serious. They said my timing is impeccable. I have original material, well, not for you because you've heard it many times, but for those people who, you know, don't usually come to Buddhist temples. And you've got just an original slide, you know, got a brown robe on. So, you know, that could really sort of be your key, you know, to success. And so he actually offered me a job. And I thought about it and said, nah. But if you love your life, you can laugh at it. Why? It's because you're not asking even yourself to be something you're not. So say, who are you? And sometimes, ever since I went to school, and you got judged, you had to do a test. And if you passed, yeah, well done. Your parents were proud, your friends thought you were smart, and I even thought I was smart. But because I was smart, everyone else was supposed to be dumb. And I thought, this must be really unfair. And you know, one thing I really hated about exams at school was you could never help your friends. When I tried, they called it cheating. It's not cheating, it's compassion. Kindness, and that's cheating. So, well, look, come on. In real life, we have to help one another. So from that time on, I always thought that, look, in schools, can't we not love the fact that, you know, we're not competing against each other, really. We always have to work in teams. So I always thought that we should, in schools, yeah, maybe have a test, but only give maybe about 10 or 20% your own personal score. And the rest, 80%, in your TEE, whatever it's called these days, your score averaged over the whole class to which you belong. So it's a teamwork to do your test. Imagine that. You have these big exams and you're all sitting together helping one another. That's not cheating. That's cooperation. That's understanding that each one of us has limitations. I make mistakes, but other people can correct those mistakes. So together we can do much more than by ourselves. That means that we don't get so critical about ourselves. You know that the MC last night at the talk on love was Angie, she's been here before, many of you know her. And so she said, just during the question time, many people, they come to a talk like this, or they come to sort of
a fellowship or a community gathering or something, because they're looking for partners in life. It's Valentine's Day after all. So she asked, put your hand up if you're single. And of course I was the first person to put my hand up because I'm single. But then the next question was, are you available? So I put my hand down. I'm single but not available. And so there's a lot of people there just looking for some friendship or partnership in life. But why is it we find it so hard to live with another person? It's crazy. I'm okay living with myself, living with lots of monks and living, I don't know, with whoever. You know, but why is it hard? And it's because that thing about, is it my fault? Is it the partner I live with? You know, they're not good enough. My monks, I should make sure the monks have got a much higher standard of obedience and being able to laugh at my jokes. That's an important part before I ordain them. No, of course not. So, you know, you accept anybody. That's how desperate we are. No, it's not desperation. But it's just one of the things about true love and resilience is I found this out a long time ago. If you allow people to be, what do I mean by that? Allow people to make mistakes. Allow myself to make mistakes. You know, sometimes, well, there is, you know, we made a little bit of a mistake, miscalculations later on in the month or next month. You know, it's actually, my mind's going to be, I'm going to be away. We're trying to find it hard to get a monk, and Venma Hasapanya is away, to get someone to be here on a Friday night. Why? You know, many monks, many people can give talks. At least, you know, when they're sort of sitting, chatting around, they can chat for hours. So what's the difference between chatting for hours, having a cup of coffee with a mate, and sitting in front of a microphone on YouTube? I don't know how many people are watching this. What's the difference? I just can't see the difference. I'm just talking to one of you, just over there, just on the, in the reception area, talking to 1,000 or 10,000. I don't know how many people sometimes watch. It's just the same. So, but when you're afraid of making mistakes, that's when you make more mistakes. Because you're worried what other people think of you. Because I was told, you're not good enough. Hands up if you're not good enough. Hands up if you are good enough. I don't know, I change my mind every now and again. Yeah, they have to wait. No, because this is the lions. I'm a lion tamer. So I've got to tame the lions. But anyway, so when you are at peace with yourself and you allow yourself to make mistakes, you find you're like the soft string, loose. Life, you make a mistake, you laugh. You do something wrong and you just make a joke about it. Of course, sometimes it can hurt a person, so you have to just make sure you acknowledge the AFL code. Have they started the footy season again yet? No. The AFL code. You all know the AFL code? Acknowledge, forgive, learn. Most people don't even get to acknowledging they made a mistake because they're afraid to make a mistake. They're afraid to be sick. They're afraid to do things wrong. They're afraid to die. They're afraid to let people go. It's wonderful when you let people go. You know, there's Cherry, wherever she is. She knows everybody's, oh, there you are, birthdays and death days. That's my mum behind there, the little photograph. Where is she? She died on February the 16th. So I had a lovely time. That's my mum. That's the white hurting, not the wombat on there. That's a wombat in there, by the way. That's okay. But anyway, so to be... No, it's okay. Look, they're talking about pointing your feet at the Buddha, but If you put it that way, you're pointing at somewhere. There's Buddhas all over this place. So whichever way you point your feet, you're going to point them somewhere. So I give you dispensation. Please come on, point them. Point. Come. It's okay. This is a great example. It's okay to make mistakes. No, it's wonderful. Great. Come on, point them. Because it's even worse. Thank you. It's even worse being disrespectful to the monk. So I said it's really important. I like obedience. It's the reason you're doing that. So it's not out of disrespect because you've got sore legs. Compassion is really important. So anyway, so kindness. This is, now you see, that's how you get people not to point their legs, because out of kindness, then you don't want to anymore. Yes, okay, whatever. Anyway. So this is where we learn just resilience and also kindness and love. People make mistakes. People do things wrong. And your partner, Valentine's Day, you find somebody, and what happens? You're always so tough on them, judging them. What was that case? There was, they gave a talk over in Kuala Lumpur, and it was in a university, and one of the lecturers, question time, hand up and said, "I caught my husband lying to me this morning. Real lie. I can't trust him anymore. What should I do? Should I get divorced?" Because, you know, with a relationship, trust is really important. So I said to her, "How long have you been married?" She said, "About 3 years now." "What do you do in this university?" I know she was a math teacher, specialised in statistics. Yes! I've got my chance. Because I used to do maths. And so I said, "Well, look, statistics. Married for 3 years, let's say 1,000 days, you know, roughly. 1,000 days you've been married, and maybe, you know, in a marriage relationship, maybe on average over the whole year, maybe 10 things every day." That's quite conservative. 10 things you say to somebody which could be right, which could be wrong. So since you've been married, 10,000 statements your husband has made to you. Now he's lied for the first time. So according to probability theory, the next time he opens his mouth, there's a 10,000 to 1 chance he's telling the truth. What do you mean that's not trustworthy? If we could find a politician 10,000 to 1 times, you know, I'd elect him as Prime Minister, wouldn't you? But why is it we focus on the faults? And we make mistakes as well. So one of the things is, if we stop focusing on the faults and actually just understand that, you know, sometimes people do say the wrong things. Why do they say? Why do people lie? It's because they're afraid of telling the truth. They feel that they made a mistake and I can't tell anybody. One of the reasons why, if you are in a relationship, really committed relationship, for goodness sake, let people know they can make mistakes. Let your partner know she doesn't need to be perfect. Because you're not perfect. Otherwise you wouldn't be a match. Imagine living with someone who's really perfect. That would drive you insane. But they're good enough. Because they're good enough, because we're not afraid of making mistakes, we love life, mistakes are real. And so because we love life, they're real, it does mean that we can love ourselves. We're imperfect. Your partner's imperfect. Life is imperfect, which is why it makes it beautiful. The Indian Ocean. Up in monastery at Serpentine, sometimes you go to the right places, there's beautiful views of the sunset of the Indian Ocean. But the best sunsets only come when there's a bit of cloud. dust, or even smoke on the horizon. Because you need that, the imperfection, to spread these beautiful streaks of gold and orange and yellows and crimsons over the horizon. Without that, you see the sun go down, but it wouldn't be as glorious. It's imperfections which make life beautiful. That's why I love imperfections. That's why I acknowledge them, forgive them, and learn from them. That gives resilience to life. And when we get resilience to life, we understand what it is. We don't try and force life to be something which it can never give us. Aircraft are late sometimes. What can you expect? It was so late once when I once went over to give a big talk in Indonesia, flew Garuda, and you know what happened? It wasn't delayed, it was cancelled. 24 hours. What did I do? I remembered. Well, this was a time when there was a big bird flu epidemic in Asia, and Garuda is a bird. So I've so it must mean the aircraft has got the flu. No, that's much better than getting angry, like I saw. You can't do this to me, why do this to me? And it's, I don't know if you ever fly Qantas. I don't know, Qantas seems to have always the most turbulence. You know why, don't you? Why it's always bumpy? Because it's the flying kangaroo. That's what kangaroos do. They bump. Oh, well, okay, you know, just. So when you love life, accept life, at peace with life, you've got resilience and you also got fun. Love, laughter and life. Because, you know, the only people I've ever seen which don't laugh, even when I tell them some incredibly funny jokes, and they refuse to laugh. You know who those people are? Dead people. They're in their box, they just sit there. So, remember that. Life, love, and laughter. They go together. And if you can learn just how to love life, it doesn't mean wanting to be perfect. It doesn't mean wanting yourself to be perfect. It doesn't want to mean your relationship to be perfect. Like, you never find a partnership if you want to find the perfect guy, the perfect girl, the perfect anything, the perfect job, the perfect monk, the perfect Buddhist society, the perfect anything. You die before you have that, and it's just such stress. So, when I once went to a cemetery and I saw all these headstones with RIP, what does that mean? Rest in peace. It's a bit late when you're dead to rest in peace. So I decided I want to rest in peace now. Now. You know, the modern generation, now. We want it now. So rest in peace now. Okay, so now I'll let you rest in peace. And actually not real peace, because we've got the monsters coming in now. So just do one question from overseas, because if I don't answer this question now, the talk is ending. We're going to get the lions in a moment. But I'll answer one question otherwise. Please excuse me, I can't answer many questions this evening, otherwise the lions will eat me. So I decided, okay, yeah. Okay, Thomas from US, is true self-love okay, or should one cut off love of oneself? It's love life. And you're part of life. May all beings be happy and well. You're one of those beings. If you know how to love this being, who's you, who bears your name, then you can quite easy to love others. But if you don't love this being who bears your name, then you become a bit of a narcissist. People think you're loving yourself. You're not. You're just hiding from life. Okay, what can I do if my true love has a partner? Of course, if you understand self-love, your true love is yourself, and you yourself has a partner, so it's all okay. And just a quick one for the last one before it is. Does trying to reconcile with X consider right action when it's done with compassion and care? Reconcile with, you know who my ex-partner is? Me, yesterday. I was with me all day yesterday. In Singapore yesterday. So, reconcile with yourself, first of all. Have you got a good relationship with yourself? Have you divorced yourself? Have you separated from yourself? In other words, addictions, getting drunk, some of those things is escaping from yourself. So you have yourself now and your ex-self. Go into the ex-self, reconcile with who you were. And then when you love yourself, then you can love anybody. Or is it better to let go and wait for the next one? Ha ha ha. If you want another partner, you know what I've always said, they're all the same. Well, it's girls, boys, yeah, they've got a different chassis, but the same engine. Girls and boys, sometimes they've got a different paint job. In other words, you know, dark skin, light skin, yellow skinned. Sometimes they've got stretched, like big guys or small ones, fat ones, skinny ones, you know, cars, whatever, they're just pretty much the same. In other words, I can't resist this little anecdote because you know the story of the thousand petal lotus, and on the outside, it's really, when they're closed at night, lotus closed at night, it's dirty, it's rough, it takes all the dust, and no one would ever think that inside that lotus, when it's all closed up, there's the most beautiful, wonderful, fragrant of petals inside. It needs to be opened up. And that's each one of you, and me. So because of life, we've closed up. And we look at ourselves and think, how can anything beautiful be inside this? Rough, serrated, wounded, dirty, bruised, damaged. But you know when inside every lotus is the most beautiful, fragrant of petals. Inside of every human being, especially you and your ex, there's these beautiful, wonderful petals. If you can see that, how do you get to that? You have to have the light and warmth of the sun, mindfulness and kindness, what we teach here, mindfulness and kindness, and then you open up. And you wouldn't believe how gorgeous you are inside. How hot or how cool. I can't understand which one to use. Because some people say, if you're really beautiful, you're hot. But if you dress well, you're cool. So anyway, whatever. Anyway, you're beautiful. Thank you. Okay, so sadhu, sadhu, big one, sadhu. You have to have three he's at the end of the sadhus. Okay, can we separate out of it because we got the lions coming in? It's pretty dangerous, so you've got to move around a bit.